What's up, world? Welcome to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. I'm your host, Amir Ali. Today, I will be speaking with legendary dancer, creative director, actor, and all-around awesome performer, Anthony Burrell. You don't want to miss this. But hey, before you do anything, make sure you subscribe and share this episode with a friend. God bless you, everyone.
What's up, world? Welcome to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. I'm your host, Amir Ali. I'm an opinionated fat boy from the west side of Detroit. I was groomed in Chicago and shaped in New York, but in my heart, Paris is home. Join me on my quest to get answers and gain clarity on a plethora of controversial topics, current events, and political issues. It's a lot going on in the world that I want to discuss, so please take a listen and tell me your thoughts.
Tell me what's your thoughts on, what's your thoughts on this, what's your thoughts on.
The world of dance is filled with many legends, but today I have the pleasure of speaking with legendary dancer, choreographer, creative director, and actor Anthony Burrell. Anthony is an amazing performer whose dance ability is second to none. Anthony dances with a precision and perfection that leaves audiences everywhere, captivated and amazed. His natural God-given talent caught the attention of legendary dancer Judith Jameson, who personally asked Anthony to join the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater. Anthony has worked with entertainment royalty like the Queen Beyoncé, Mariah Carey, Stevie Wonder, Rihanna, Prince, Jay-Z, Jennifer Lopez, Mary J. Blige, and Brandy, to name just a few. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome award-winning choreographer and legendary performer, Anthony Burrell. Anthony Burrell, thank you for coming to the show.
Well, thank you for having me, man. It's a pleasure.
It is my pleasure. I mean, it's funny, when I first found out about you, it's a funny story, right? So I was at the Beyoncé Experience. I went to the show, but that was when I saw it on the DVD. And I was like, man, who is that guy? And you were dancing. And I was just like, who is this guy? Because I've always loved dance. But usually when you see male dancers, sometimes they come out very feminine. Or they just, you know, it's, I don't know. It just, you didn't look like someone that should be able to do what you were doing there, you know? And I was so captivated. So how was it dancing with Beyoncé?
Well, you know, that was an experience of a lifetime. One, being a creative, a dancer first, then choreographer, and a creative with Beyoncé. But, you know, I hear that a lot when people say they saw me with B for the first time and they saw me do my contemporary ballet modern solo. Usually that's a stigma that's attached to male dancers that, you know, if you do ballet, if you can stick your leg way up in the sky, it's associated with a feminine like quality or way of life. I mean, especially in our community, African-American community, that's something I faced, you know, all my life. And I don't know if it's something that I've learned to mask or if it's just a part of who I am. You know, that's weird that you say that, but I get that all the time. How could you do this and not look like that? But, you know, it's just who I am and what I love. And it's not like I'm intentionally trying to put on a face or a mask, but, you know, there are male dancers that, you know, can do it and do it well and do it at a high level and look like the alpha male to that, you know, that female, you know. And I think that's what my role was in that position with Beyoncé, was to have that vulnerable quality, but also still show the power and passion of a technically trained dancer.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what you did. It was captivating because I was like, who was that guy? Like, at that point, I don't even know if I knew how to look you up, because that was like, what, 2009? Something like that.
So it 2007, was 2008.
Yeah. So it was early. So it was like before the Twitters and all that stuff. You know, I think Twitter was about to come out. So, you know, I've been a fan of yours for that long. And
I know it was interesting because you also did hip hop in that show as well. So it was interesting because that's what I would have expected to see you do. But it was when you were doing the ballet, it was the most captivating to me. And once I found out who you were, I was like, oh, okay, his name's Anthony. He's from Philly and all that good stuff. It was like, okay. And then I started seeing you on other things and started seeing your name more. And that made me happy because you don't see many Black male contemporary dancers that I believe dance at your level. So how did you get started with dancing?
To be honest, it was always something that was in my genes, in my DNA. You know, I dealt with a lot of traumas as a kid, and I was almost mute. Like, I didn't talk much. But when I found dance, street dance, it was started out with groups, like street dance groups. And then it kind of graduated to community center. And that community center turned into going into Pennsylvania Ballet. They saw the potential there. Pennsylvania Ballet turned into joining a dance company, then going into University of the Arts, then getting my dream job at Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater, you know, in my first year of college. So it was me just being aligned with my passion and, you know, living, dancing through my traumas and using those traumas as my superpower to kind of get me through and, you know, heal and prosper through those situations that I've, you know, lived and experienced.
What's some of the traumas?
You know, my mother was a drug addicted, so she was her abandonment, you know, abandonment issues, sexual abuse through family members and neighbors and multiple occasions. Parent relationships, my father not understanding the role of a male figure, a father. You know, a lot of people, you hear those a lot, but you think about, like, the average Black male in the community and how the absence of that male figure,
or the lack thereof.
Oh, the lack thereof. It just alludes to so much. The disconnection of parenting, of structure, of, you know, just the presence and being there to kind of uplift and build that young boy is really instrumental. So, not to say that I had a terrible upbringing, you know. I grew up with my grandmother and, you know, just had people that kind of stepped in. So, and kind of filled in the gaps. And all those experiences are what made me who I am today. That's why I call them my superpowers, because you look at these superheroes, all of them have issues, you know, but they use their issues to kind of overcome what they've experienced.
I commend you for speaking about your traumas and the molestation and different things, because one of the hardest things I did was I did an episode this year about my molestation. And I did it because a couple of people reached out to me that had been molested, Black people. And it's not a voice of many males speaking about that they were molested. And it was one of the hardest things that I did, you know. So I thank you for even bringing that up, because so often you don't hear our stories or even hear us talk about it, people who look like you and I. So I commend you for that.
I think it's just so taboo. And I think for Black men, we've been kind of scripted to mask our feelings and emotions. Don't cry, be a man, you can be strong. Like, you don't need nobody to, you know, that's been embedded in us from child. So we've been predestined to, like, cover those things up and not talk about it and just suppress it and deal with it and be a man. And, you know, that whole stigma, that toxic Black thing that we deal with in our community, that's, you know, still very present. So I find it necessary, you know, as a director and a teacher and a mentor to a lot of students, you know, and a visual presence for Black men, I think it's important to be transparent and continue to provide a platform, or, you know, it's that visibility thing. Someone that looks like you, that acts like you, that, you know, may have the same experiences of you, but you don't know until you hear that story. So
it's funny when you say that, because, you know, people do tell you, you know, be a man, but it's so hard to be a man when you couldn't even really be a boy. you know, when you're transitioning and the people that you wanted to be there weren't there or things happened to you, you know? So it's great when you can get older and unpack those things properly, and get the proper help that you may need or the proper love. But Ailey, right?
Yeah.
I'm in New York now, but I didn't grow up in New York. I'm from Michigan originally. And when I looked at Ailey, or people that danced at Alvin Ailey, I was just like, oh my God, it was amazing. You know, when I saw Alvin Ailey dancers, I saw strength. I saw some people that looked like me, but I saw strength and power. Was it hard for you to get into Ailey? And what was that process like to get into Alvin Ailey?
Well, I just think I have a different story. You know, I was very fortunate, you know.
Shit, right?
I'm fortunate, man. You know, it's just like this thing, it was destined from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, it was always been a dream of mine. So once I knew and saw a video of Ailey when I was 14, I knew that's what it was for me. That was my pinnacle. And from that moment I saw that video, I worked my butt off for it. And I got an opportunity to perform for the artistic director at the time, Judith Jamison, who was, I don't know what the event was, but she was in Philly, and all these Philly dance groups were there performing for her. And a group that I started with in Philadelphia, Point Breeze Performing Arts Center, was performing. They were performing some of my work. But before they went on, I had did a snippet of a solo. And I had a good friend of mine who was a singer, Leslie Odom, who's doing really well now as well. He did Sung For All We Know. And I just improvised a solo. And once she saw me, she stopped the whole event, took me outside and was like, why haven't I seen you? I was like, I'm still in high school, ma'am. I'm still in school. I really want to be in Ailey. She's like, well, you need to come to the audition, and so and so and so forth. So I ended up going to the audition. They didn't have any slots for the first company, but they did for the second company. So they stuck me in the second company.
What does that mean? First and second company?
The junior company.
Got you.
Which is like the student company.
Okay.
Training company. And did that for a year, toured with the training company for a year nationally. And the year after, I got my contract with the Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater.
Wow. So what does that look like? You were how old?
I was 18 when I got into second company and 19 when I started my contract with the Ailey company.
Okay, because I'm pretty sure a lot of people that will listen to this interview will be dancers, and some of them may be aspiring to be, you know, have a career similar to yours. So you were 18, 19, you have a contract with Ailey. What did that look like? Can you share that, like, you know, about how much you were making and things like that?
Well, this was in 1999, so this is over 22 years ago.
Yeah.
When I first got into the company, I was making $725 a week. But mind you, when I was in the junior company, I was making $211 a week living in New York City. Luckily, wow. I had my guardians who kind of adopted me.
Yeah.
Who owned the studio and kind of took me in and got me through high school, my first year of college, and paid my rent while I was in the Ailey too.
Wow.
Until I got my contract, I didn't have to pay rent. So they made sure I was good. So luckily I had that support system in place. But, you know, even now, I don't think they're much. I think they're probably about like $900, $925 a week, $975. Starting out. But when I went back the second time around, I left Ailey abruptly to go work with Beyonce. And
let's not skip that. So how did that happen? You were at Ailey. What happened so you were able to dance with Beyonce?
So what happened was while in the company, I got a phone call from one of my mentors. He didn't call me particular. He called the studio lounge. The Ailey company dancers phone and was like, hey, this choreographer for Gadsden is looking for male dancers, 6 feet and above. So I was like, oh, okay, I'll go shoot over to Radio City Music Hall. So I went over there on my lunch break, 3 to 4, and I went there and he saw me and he was just like, oh, you're a dancer? I mean, because I was taller than most of the guys.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, what can you do? And I, of course, did some technical Alvin Ailey stuff, lift my leg up to the sky. He was blown away. He immediately took me to the dressing room where Beyonce was. I'm like, look what this boy can do.
What did that feel like when you went back there?
It was great. It was great because she immediately she sparked up a conversation about her sister being a dancer, and just that connection just kind of made us connect instantly. So it's just like when I say these things kind of just happen, and like it was my true destiny to kind of just be in that space and place, and just to step in my divine, you know. It was divine, you know. I just can't put it no other way than that.
But see, you didn't just dance for Beyonce. Like, you were like a premier dancer, one of her premier dancers. I think like Ashley is maybe her main dancer, but I mean, I think you were like the premier male.
Yeah, at a point, you know. But then I switched over to choreography. I just think, you know, she gave me a great platform. The visibility of being with her, even her first tour, was unimaginable, because every female pop star, every artist that saw her saw me and wanted me to work with them. So I got a chance to work with like Rihanna, Katy Perry, Mary J. Blige, Ciara, like all of these girls that were in her realm were definitely wanted a piece of what she had, you know, because they see her production was so pristine and so on point. And it just kind of gave me an easy way through the industry, just being passed around by these great artists.
Well, usually when you hear the word passed around, it's a bad thing, but you were passed amongst some, you know, like top tier people. You know, you weren't passing to, you know, just some like second level people. It was really you went and you started doing some big things, you know, and even to end up with Mariah, you know. But what was that like touring with Beyonce? Do you guys like stay in hotel room together, or you get your own room? How was that?
So touring is just like you're on their schedule. You know, you get a tour book, you know, for the first leg. It's maybe 30 dates for the first date, and you give an itinerary. When's your checkout? When's your check-in? You're on somebody's schedule nonstop. You got to be on the bus by 5. You got to check out the hotel by 3. You take bus overnight, get there at 3 in the morning, sleep to 12, check out by 12 to get to the venue, go sleep on the bus from 1 to 3. Then we go on the venue, start teching, and you do the same thing over and over again. It's a tough lifestyle, but you know, one that I'm very fortunate and blessed to have experience.
So is it like you have to dance twice? So if you have a show, because I know Beyonce likes to rehearse. No.
We rehearse, like the thing about her, we rehearse the mess out of a tour months and months before.
Okay.
So the work is done prior. When we get there, it's just like a tech rehearsal. We're doing either quick fixes, fixing things that went bad the day before, or just kind of just doing a normal sound check to kind of get us through some of those glitches we had at the show prior. But we're not definitely running the whole show.
Got you. What was something that your greatest experience or the most memorable experience from your first tour with Beyonce?
I would say going to South Africa and performing at Nelson Mandela's as soon as he was released from prison.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they had a 46664 concert.
Yeah.
World AIDS Day concert, and we were a part of that. And my first time in Africa, first time meeting so many great people, Oprah, like just being in that space, and I was amongst greatness and I felt like I belonged there. So
Well, I think you did. And if I'm being honest, right, I remember once I was watching So You Think You Can Dance. Like, I loved So You Think You Can Dance. I think Danny, who since passed away, was one of my favorite male dancers. Seeing that man dance, like, I remember one time he did something. I forget the choreographer. Oh my God, I can't think of her name. White lady, spiked hair.
Mia Michaels.
There you go. She had choreographed it. But he danced to something that she did, and it was just so amazing. But, you know, rest in peace, Danny. But when I saw that you were auditioning for the show, I was a little upset. Because I was like, why? What does he need to be here for? You know, he's done so much. And then I was upset at how things happened. Like, I thought you were better than the show. But then when it was like some, whether or not you would be on the show or not, I was just like, are you kidding me? He outdanced half the people who were auditioning. So what was that like? What made you want to be on So You Think You Can Dance?
Well, I think that experience was, you know, I had went back to Italy at that time after not dancing in that type of room for about 5 years and was touring with all these artists and groups. And I went back to Italy after 5 year hiatus and realized that that dream had died, you know, and that had finished. And I just kind of ruined my time, my memory of what Italy was by going back a second time. Because I left abruptly to go dance with Beyonce. So I was like, I need to go finish that dream. So leaving and then coming back, it was just a whole different aesthetic, a different group of dancers. It was just different. So I definitely think that transition from me leaving Italy the second time, I felt like, what did I want to do?
Yeah.
You know, and So You Think You Can Dance was in New York. I auditioned and didn't think much of it. I thought it would be a breeze. And, you know, to be honest, like the judges without the editing, you know, they were all like, oh, you're the dancer to watch. You're the dancer to beat. Like these dancers should be honored to be in a room with you. Yada, yada, yada. Fast forward to production and editing and, you know,
yeah,
they, you know, it's what it was. But the black guy that they did take at Achike is now on Power, which I'm really proud and happy, you know, to see that, you know, that platform and has been instrumental, you know, not only for me, like for myself. I think it was important for me to be on that show and to be a representation for black boys, which is the reason why I wore tights, which all those other boys usually wore, like gym shorts, that contemporary world. I was determined to wear tights because, you know, when I was a young boy that seen Alvin Ailey, I didn't see nobody. Before them, I saw no one that looked like me until I saw Revelations. I saw the brown men in the brown outfits. So I knew I had the opportunity to make an impact and inspire kids and inspire boys of colors in particular. So I wore a unitard and did my solo, and you know, they loved it. They gave me praises, but I didn't end up making the show. You know, I think it was my experience for certain. You know, I danced with one of the judges before, like hired him one time for a job. So it was like that's where it kind of got funny. You know, like they knew my experience was, it was nothing much that they could teach me or could give me besides the visible platform of being on that show and just, you know. So I was hurt by it, but of course, you know, because I had big plans to be America's favorite dancer.
Yeah.
But everything happens for a reason. I didn't get the show, but, you know, after my fourth episode aired where I didn't make it, I got phone calls and direct bookings to go on tour. I got a call to go on Katy Perry tour right after that. So it was like, I you know, it was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah, which I think everything happens for a reason. I listen, I'm a person who loves dance by watching it. So I don't claim to know everything, but I know what's good, right? And I think I always hear people talk about technique, technique, technique. And I think that's one of the things that's flawless with you is your technique and your passion mixed with a little bit of power and then subtle at the right times as well. What is your training background? Like if you were to tell people I'm trained in this, 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 and this, what all can you do?
That's a broad question, but I'll say loosely, modern dance is my passion. Horton is a form of a style of technique that I've trained in primarily from high school throughout my early years and has become my most dominant form of training, which is a strength and conditioning technique.
Okay.
You know, it helps build flexibility, strength, working in parallel. It's the opposite of ballet. Ballet, your feet are turned out. In Horton, your feet are turned parallel, but it kind of devises the same physicality and strengthening that ballet has, but in a parallel sense. And, you know, just black dance, you know, black dance is about culture, you know,
yeah.
Like just passion, the music, like, you know, our storytelling, our stories, our generational traumas, like all that stuff that's embedded in me is like, that stuff that's in me already that I'm just a vehicle for it, you know, and it's just there. And I just so happened to touch and tap on that talent that was my gift, or part of my gift.
What was it like growing up in Philly, being the boy who could dance?
I was a faggot. I was a sissy. I was a punk. Mm. You know, even with my own family members, you know, no one understood it. But because that was my voice, that was my way of expressing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was like, I know this is what was right for me. So being called all those names, of course, were hurtful and, you know, life altering because, you know, you start doubting yourself. You start doubting your gifts. You start doubting, am I supposed to be dancing? You know, trying to sneak and dance. And, you know, those are things that were just hard as a kid, to be honest. You know, like, you know, not being able to express and be who I wanted to be and live how I wanted to live and embark on the dancing and the things that were considered effeminate in my family. You know, I had to hide and do them because they were frowned upon. They weren't masculine enough. They weren't, you know, the things that the men of the Burrell family did. So they realized that once they start seeing me in newspapers and articles and I start bringing paychecks home, that, you know.
Got that money.
They knew.
What gave you the strength to keep going, though? Because, you know, similar people in different fields tell the same story about masculinity in the Black community and needing to appear masculine when you may not be, or do things that are masculine when you are. What gave you the strength to continue?
Not denying my gift. I knew it was something that I couldn't deny.
Yeah.
I couldn't help it. I can't help it. I couldn't help but dance. I can't help but, like, see myself in, you know, these dance groups. And people started to recognize that from at weddings, at, like, block parties, at, like, just little social things. People were like, oh, this boy can dance. This boy can really do it. And it was just, like, this innate thing. Like, I wasn't trying to hide it. It's just, like, when the music would, like, come over me like the Holy Ghost, just take away, you know? And it was just, it was my gift.
You know how when you hear people, some of the big singers say, you know, I didn't think I could sing. I just, it was something that I did that I loved, right? When did you know, like, I can dance?
I think when I was in the room, the youngest kid in the dance company, I was like 14 and everyone else was like in college. And I was like, oh, I can do this. Like, I can, I'm up in here with these people as the baby, you know, and it wasn't like I was arrogant about it. I was humbled by being in the space, but I was, you know how they say, living the moment. I was in that moment like, wow, I'm really in here with people I admire and inspire to be like, you know, especially when I got into Alvinelli, like those dancers that I looked up to on at the time was like VHS, you know, and like saw these dancers and would rewind their parts and would emulate them and would try to be like them. And, you know, fast forward 5-6 years, I'm in the same stage performing Revelations with these people. It was like, just wow. Like, I knew that's where, like, you know, your destiny. When like it just felt right. It just felt like I was in the right space. And I always found myself in the right space, in the right place.
What would you say was one of the main things that you learned from Frank Gaston? I mean, he's such a legend in the industry.
The one thing I would say that comes all right with mind is he said, kiss. Keep it simple, stupid. He will always tell me, keep it simple. You know, you have told me I have this amazing talent and ability, and people will be intimidated by that. And they were, you know, even some pop stars because of how I trained, how I was trained. I was trained like a drill sergeant. So when I went into these spaces, I would train and do the same thing. And people aren't normally trained like that. You know, they're, you know, it's just not the same aesthetic, not the same care. But because I have that background and that training, like it was a different approach for me. But I think what he meant by keep it simple is that because I was so polished and so crisp and so clean that I don't have to do extra. I don't have to do much more. You know, they don't have the same abilities and qualities that I've had. So I don't have to work hard or work as hard as they did, you know. So that's one thing that really stuck out.
How did you end up dancing for Mariah?
Random, same thing. Got a random call from Debbie Allen. me and her daughter Vivian were friends.
Oh, just a random call from Debbie Allen, you know.
Yeah, random call. So random.
Yeah. Random. Uh-huh. Tell her to call me.
She was like, I need a guy. Are you in New York? I was like, I can be in New York. I said, what you need? She was like, well, I got this job with Butterfly, and I need somebody that can do this and do that. Next day, I was on a flight to New York, and of course, you know, no rehearsal, no nothing. I get to set, me and Miss Allen walk through this piece, and, you know, Mariah, of course, is like 3 hours late to set. And Miss Allen had to leave, so I was there by myself with Mariah. First time working with her. Just guiding and directing her. And of course, like, because of my trained background, my partner and experience, and my ability to, you know, always try to make the woman look good, make them your first priority on stage, you know, especially when partnering.
Yeah.
She felt the comfortability with me, Mariah did. And from that day, she didn't do any other shows without me until, you know, stop working with each other.
Wow. What was that experience like, though, being on tour? Because was it more dancing on the Mariah tour or less dancing as comparison to when you danced with Beyonce?
I would say more dancing because Mariah ain't do nothing.
Okay.
You know, so I had to do more movement. You know, we were the base of her production. She was the voice. So we did all the coloring around her.
Right.
To try and make it seem as incorporated as possible, but definitely more dancing.
Okay. It was funny because, you know, when you're watching something like that, like, I think Mariah's cool, you know, but I'm more of a Beyonce fan. So okay. I was watching the clip and I was like, wait a minute. You know, I was like, that looks like, I was like, oh yeah. And then she had the series, and I think you were on there too, that she had. So it was really interesting to see a person's growth because, you know, you don't know these people. I didn't know you, but I knew of you from your work. So it was like great to see the progression of seeing like, oh, okay, I remember him from here. Okay, I remember him from here. You know, they're just recognizing you. But I always wondered, did you ever have a time where you just wanted to give it all up and wanted to stop dancing?
Yeah, I did. After that whole scandal with Mariah on New Year's Eve, yeah. I just stopped everything because I felt like I was exhausting myself and my resources, my talent for these artists that were so unappreciative of, you know, my presence. And I'm just a passionate person that just wants the best for everything that I do because I'm just a perfectionist and I want things to be right and great. And I felt like that was looked over by Mariah's management and they tried to like sabotage me. So I stopped dancing for a complete year. Didn't do nothing. Lived off my savings while I looked around for schools. And that's how I opened up my school. It wasn't about me no more. It was about the next generation and passing this information on and giving opportunities to other Black and brown dancers of color and just passing on that information. So that's why I am where I am today, because not that I gave up on my art or creating, but I just, you know, I was burnt out from those experiences.
Your school is in Philly, right?
Atlanta.
Atlanta. Okay. I thought you had a school in Philly.
I have a program. I have a program I co-direct in Philly.
Okay. Because I know it was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago. You had something going on in Philly, and I had a couple of friends who were auditioning for it. So, but how is it being from like the East Coast and now having a school in Atlanta? What is that like? How does that feel?
Oh, it's a lot of haters out here in Atlanta. I can say that. You know, people see my name and my resume, and they just like, why is he here? Why is he trying to, you know? So they, it's so cliquish here. So I'm a little bit mixed on the whole Atlanta thing, Atlanta space, but I think I'm here for a bigger picture, bigger purpose, and the dancers that I'm training, I feel very grateful to be in their life. So yeah, that's all I can ask for, is just continue to be in that space where I'm training people that want to be trained.
Now you choreograph as well. What is your proudest moment in that field of choreography?
I choreographed this male piece called Endangered Species on Filadenko. It was about 6 Black men and the plight of, you know, just being a Black man in America and the injustice that we go through with the system. and it was really well received. And I was really, it was my first piece that I choreographed professionally. And I had so much, not to prove to myself, because it was like, I know I could do commercial choreography. I knew I could be in that space, but this is my passion. This is what I trained all my life to do. But to be in this space to choreograph on the company where I grew up and just be able to use my voice as a voice of take a political stance, you know, with my art was powerful. And it was really powerful to see the impact that that piece had. So I was really proud of it.
So, you know, being a dancer, a person who has danced in tours and everything, after the tour, how do you feel? Like, I always, one of my favorite tours, I love the Beyonce experience. It's like number three on my list. But the Janet tour was to me one of the just, it was amazing. Like everything, you know, before all of these pyrotechnics and all of that stuff, but just everything that she brought to that tour. And afterwards, I just like, oh my goodness, you know, is everything on your body aching? But, you know, being a dancer, how are you feeling like after dancing for like hours on a tour? How does your body feel and how are you mentally knowing that you have to do it again the next day?
Well, normally it doesn't really happen the next day because the singers usually have a day in between for their voice.
Okay.
Unless it's like a 2-day city and, you know, we usually have a day off after that. But the adrenaline is pumping, you know, and usually we are at the after party getting tore up after the after party. So we out getting lit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the party, keep the party going, you know, you got, you know, after parties, the stuff that's going on in the city, groupies, you know, like it's just a bunch a bunch of foolishness that
everything,
you
know, has its place, right?
Everything has its place. Tour bus travel, you know, people riding the bus with us to different cities. Like, it's really like the tour life was really like what they say, sex, drugs, and rock and roll, bro. It's like, yeah, my wildest dreams. Your wildest dreams is what you expect a tour with Beyonce or Mariah to be like. Traveling to all these great spaces and places, don't have to pay for hotels, you get paid per diem to eat. Like, it's, you know, just the life.
Yeah, it's a wonderful experience. So you've danced for a lot of people. Out of everyone that you've danced for, you know, taking away anything bad or whatever that happened, who could call you right now and you would stop whatever you were doing and go and dance for them again?
Mariah.
Wow. That's awesome.
I had a great friendship with her. I had a great friendship with her before that incident. And I just felt a really strong connection with her. And I felt that she really trusted my creative voice and allowed me to, you know, implement some things in her already established career. And to have someone that I idolize me and respect me the same way, it was just...
I think she believed in you. You know, I mean, you saw a trust between you guys, even on that day. I mean, because you kept dancing and I didn't feel as if you left her. I felt like you were there. I felt like you were present, you know?
Well, as the creative, like, I was nervous. I was scared because I knew what was going on behind the scenes.
What was going on?
It was some things with her, you know, some things she came out and spoke about, her mental health.
Yeah.
Afterwards, and that wasn't really publicized then.
And her management too, right? Because I know that lady was interesting.
Her management were trying to push the blame on everyone else, but except for put the blame where it needed to be.
Yeah.
On that mental health issue. And, you know, it was like, I was like, just push her down the steps. Let her go to hospital or something. Like, don't let her go on stage, y'all. Like, do I gotta push her? Like, what is going on? But no one understood the sincerity of what I was saying. Like, this can't go on, but it did. And, you know, it was what it was. And, like, still to this day, it still is like a part of me that feels robbed from that experience, you know.
Why?
I don't know. I just felt like, you know, I just, you know, when you devote yourself to a project,
yeah,
and it comes back and hit you in the face like that. Yeah, it was sickening. It was something that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy.
Have you tried to reach out to her and, you know?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
I don't know. This is how I work. once I experience something, I don't need to repeat history. I don't need to repeat history. Once I've done it, it's done. Like I've experienced it. Like I learned that by going back to Alvin Ailey. Like yeah. I got the experience already. I don't need to go back and ruin what was already created. And the reason why I say I will go back to Mariah is because of our friendship. Like behind cameras, off cameras, regular on the phone, we would sit on the phone for hours and just be laughing and talking shit and just having a good time. And I gained a great friend in that process. But because management was insecure about my presence and the control that I was gaining, you know, they did everything they could to get me out of there.
Yeah. You know, not beating a dead horse, but if you gained a great friend and it was a bad situation, it might be worth just sending love. Because sometimes what I find in situations that, you know, where I reached out to a person, they wanted to reach out to, but didn't know how, you know? And I have a friend that I did that with, who's pretty popular. And, you know, we had a misunderstanding and I reached out to them and they just said, I didn't know if you would respond if I messaged you. So I didn't want to say anything because no one wants to feel, you know, like, okay, I'm the one I reached out and you didn't say anything. But, you know, if you had a great friendship with her, anything that was good is worth fighting for. So, you know, if you feel the need, text her. But you've danced more for Beyonce, though, right? Than you danced for Mariah, right?
I don't know what you mean by that, but...
In different tours, because I know you were more than the Beyonce experience.
Well, I mean, it's kind of equal. I spent 4 consecutive years with Mariah.
Okay.
But with Beyonce, I did 2004 with her tour, Ladies First tour. And then I went with her with Destiny's Child. Then I went on to Rihanna's tour. Then went back to Beyonce experience. And then I kind of stayed on as a choreographer from like 2008 to 2013. And then I came back on full-time as a full-time choreographer 2014. So I've had more experiences creating with Beyonce. So I don't know.
Yeah. I see what you mean. 4 years consecutive, but then over the years with Beyonce. Yeah, it's funny because, man, you know, I don't know how you feel about your success, but I know some dancers would just love to have dance with one popular person, and you dance with more than 10 popular people. When people give you accolades, do you ever say, you know, I'm not worthy, or do you feel that you are worthy of the respect that people give you?
To be honest, I don't think of it as being worthy of the accolade. I acknowledge, but I think what people don't understand is that, like, I have a star in my own right. You know, I think what we don't realize as people is that we all have the ability to shine and be shine bright like those stars and artists that we look up to. And once I realized they were respecting me like I was respecting them, I realized that I had something special too. And it made me look at myself different, how they respected me. So I don't know if that makes sense. But
no, it makes great sense because we look at celebrities. It's always funny because when I disagree with a celebrity, people are like, what? I'm like, yeah, you know, just because they're a celebrity and they said something doesn't mean I have to agree with it. So I totally know what you mean. We all are stars in our own right. And yeah, I mean, to me, like I said, I've never seen anyone. I've been to France multiple times and seen what we might call a true ballet, but I have not been captivated like I've been captivated when I watched you dance and when I watched Danny dance. And to me, that's a compliment because I think Danny was amazing. But I think you are amazing, too, because when I watch people dance, I see the story that I believe they're trying to tell, you know.
But Danny has a great story, too. You know, I never got to work with Danny, dance with him, but we were always, you know, he was exiting, I was entering these spaces or vice versa. And he just has a great story, too, you know, and I was devastated to hear about his passing, but. You know, some of the greats don't live long. You know, he was definitely one of the greats that blessed us with his talent. You know, like an angel on earth. You don't get a talent that big. You know, I look at him like an Amy Winehouse. You know, someone that has that innate gift that just shines like throughout all his adversities and challenges.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny because his brother, Travis. You know, he would always get all of the attention. But to be honest, I always thought that Danny was a better dancer than Travis. But I know Travis was extremely talented with choreography.
And Travis was white. Yeah. He has white skin. That's what makes it different. You know, it's a world where, you know, we're in this capitalist society where, you know, we are already counted out as black men before we even step into the space because of the color of our skin. You know, so regardless of how talented he was, we got to work 10 times as hard as that male with that white skin to be accepted on the same level.
Yeah, very true. But you are a lighter skinned black male. Has that ever benefited you in the dance arena where you were picked because you were lighter?
No, I think just my overall height, my appeal and my abilities. And I'm a good looking guy. If I say so myself, I think being an attractive guy, a man that people desire, I think it helps. You know, being it's part of the, like, that's what I learned most in that commercial world. It's the package, you know, your body, the face, like the appeal. Like, I wasn't always this person, you know, before I got into Beyonce world, I was this scrawny little ballerina looking boy. I made a change, you know. And of course, I wasn't a bad looking kid, but I knew what was necessary to be progressive in that field. And it's about the product. And I was a product at that point. So I had to continue to build myself and pour into myself, my body, my skin, my, you know, my overall, to be a commodity in that world.
Okay. It really cracks me up when you said, you know, I mean, a good looking guy, because, you know, I think it's sad that we live in a world now that it's almost like you can't tell the truth. You know, if you say I'm attractive, or if you say I'm the greatest, or if you say I'm, you know, different things, people, they look at you as not being humble. But I didn't take it as that. I took it as it's a truth, you know, and you have to have the confidence in yourself. And I think we can see that in your dance. So what's next for you? Because I know you had a part in the Heights, right?
Yeah, I did. A lot of people always ask me about this acting stuff. It's not my passion, you know, it's not my passion. So I'm considering now, I'm in the process of finishing my master's degree. I'm in...
Master's in what?
Fine arts and education.
Okay.
I really feel like I'm in the space of just knocking down those things that I was afraid of. I was intimidated by, and education was always one of those things, because I knew I had the talent and ability to just go out there and live my life and in a career. But was I smart enough? Was always the thing that I challenged myself with. And I'm now in that space in my last 2 months of school. Yeah, just doing the things that I want. You know, I think I've lived my life on other people's schedules, on other people's tours, on other people's itineraries.
Yeah.
I'm now living my life for me and what I want to live. I'm, you know, still with this school, I'm pouring into others. Like, I'm doing the things that I want to do, you know, living my life the way Anthony.
How does that feel, though?
Amazing. I feel like I've earned it. I feel like I've earned it. I feel like, I mean, I'm in the space of doubt sometimes in this space. But I just got to continue to trust that this direction is the right direction, because it's what I've asked for. And, you know, sometimes when we have that idle time as entrepreneurs, we get so scared, like, what are we going to do? What am I going to do?
Yeah, that's
but
true.
I just got to trust in my gift, and trust that God has protected me and ordered these footsteps for me to, you know, I quit my job, my regular day job as a school teacher, so that I could finish my degree with no distractions. And it feels so good to be able to say, I can do that, because I'm not strapped for cash. I'm not strapped for, like, opportunities. I own a house. I own a car. I have a business. Like I'm living my wildest dream.
Yeah. So you're living your wildest dream. You're in school now, so that's an accomplishment. Have you accomplished everything you wanted to accomplish?
Nah, that process is continuous. You know, I think just like you go to the gym, you work on your body. You're always unhappy with your body. You know, you get too big, now you want to get smaller. Like, these things are always continuous, like a filter. Like, you filter through things and go through life just creating tasks to knock down. And I'm constantly creating things that I want to do now, because I've reached all my goals.
What is your relationship like now with your family? Are things better?
Great.
Okay.
Yeah, they were never horrible.
Okay.
I just had, you know, a mother that was drug addicted for the first third of my life, you know, up until I was 21. And she finally got her life together. She's doing amazing.
Praise God.
My brothers who were drug baby, crack babies, you know, are still, I feel like, are having a hard time with life, you know, and finding their voice. And, you know, as a big brother, older brother, I felt like I've coddled them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Giving them a lot of opportunity, but they never really like latched on and like ran with any of them. So I'm at the space of just like just allowing them to be them, you know.
Yeah.
I can assist and help, but I can't really take on the responsibility of putting another grown man on my shoulders right now. And that's just like, you know, with everything in life, you know, I gotta be selfish. Sorry about that.
No, there's times in life where you do. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been so selfless all my life. Now it's time to kind of like take care of me and do the work to kind of heal from those traumas. I'm writing my thesis now on the trauma that I've experienced, and how I'm using my dance to kind of work through those things, and how I have built relationships and support systems all through my relationships through dance. And writing a children's book is on my horizon.
Mm.
Like I purchased like $300 in children's books this last 3 months, and just looking at writing styles and graphics.
Why a children's book?
I think it's necessary because, you know, just that visibility of seeing a black male dancer on the front of a book and saying that this is for girls. You know, the idea that we all thought, oh, ballet is for girls.
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're taught. And just to give that juxtaposition that you can see this strong black man in this space and thriving and finding a way and navigating through it and almost giving a legend, a blueprint for other young male dancers to follow, and with words of encouragement and wisdom and support that acknowledge their differences.
Yeah.
You know, even if they're queer, if they're straight or bi or, you know, just non-identifying. But I think it's just creating a platform for those brown boys that don't have that support system or have that encouragement to continue.
I think that's great.
Yeah.
That's great, man. I mean, because that's where it starts, you know. That's why I was asking why a kids book, because it's so many things during the pandemic that I had to unpack that I didn't even know I was dealing with. And it was like when I had that time alone during the pandemic where I didn't have to work, I didn't have to do anything. It was just like, whoa. So I think that's awesome that you will get them young and let them know what they're doing is okay and how they look is okay. So I think that's awesome. I know our time is basically up, but I had two more questions for you. Who are your, like, would you say, when you as a dancer, that if you had to say who your top five dancers, male or female, are, who would you say?
My top five dancers would be, concert dancer would be Desmond Richardson, Matthew Russian. Females, I would say, wow, it's a very short list. You know, I never really thought about that. Like, I have people that I aspire, but I've always had people that, like, the Matthews and the Desmonds that were just, like, my pinnacle. Yeah. I would say some of the male dancers, like Bernard Gathers from Philly, just people that came through my same lineage of training that I looked up to and aspired to be like. I don't know. I never really had favorite besides those two. And I never really thought about anything broader than that. I have dancers that I love to watch them dance. I love to watch Aisha Francis dance, who was one of Beyonce's dancers. Jasmine Harper.
Okay.
Was another talented dancer.
Okay.
And I just like dancers that are multifaceted and are capable of stepping into any genre and being a chameleon and just really owning what they do.
Yeah, no, that's great. And last question. So we've spoke a lot about black boys, young black boys, and black boys and black men. So speaking to the black men who are listening, who want to become dancers, maybe embarrassed or don't even know how to do it, what advice, being a successful Black male entertainer, because you're more than a dancer, what would you have to say to them? What advice would you give to them?
The 3 D's: dedication, determination, discipline. If you really want to do it, you'll do it. You know, you'll find a way, you'll find an opportunity, you'll make the phone calls, you'll find your way into that space. You know, even if you have to do it behind your parents' back, I think it's one of those things that your passion will find you. You know, it's like you can't run from it. You know, your heart won't let you run from it. Like, you'll be haunted by this thing. You'll see it all the time. And, you know, if you don't, you'll live your life with regrets and doubts. So I would say, go after your dream. Just pray, prepare, and proceed to that thing, because it's necessary to kind of be a full human being, like living in your true self, living in your true purpose.
I love that. Pray, prepare, and proceed. All right, Anthony Wobb, thank you so much, man. I am such a fan of yours, and I thank you for giving of yourself, you know, of your art and sharing it with us. I'm so thankful that I've had the opportunity to see you dance, and just thank you for what you give to the world, because I don't think people understand. We look at the fame and all of that stuff with celebrities or people who we see on TV. We don't think about the work. We don't think about the times that they're away from their family, the pain, you know, the sores, you know, the messed up looking feet at times, or just whatever. So thank you so much for all of the artistry and everything that you've given to us. I appreciate it.
No doubt, brother. Blessings to you.
Thank you so much, man. God bless you.
Ciao.
Peace. To the next generation of performers out there, dancers, singers, and others, be inspired by Anthony's story. Anthony's story is one of hope and what hard work and determination can bring, as long as you don't give up on your dreams. Never give up on your dreams. For more information on Anthony Burrell, you can go to his website, anthonyburrell.org. That's AnthonyBurrell.org. Or follow him on Instagram at Anthony Burrell. That's our show for today. The music used during the interview of this episode was produced by The Fifth Perspective. Thank you for listening to the What's Your Thoughts on This podcast. We truly appreciate your support. Our show is produced by Amir Ali. Our theme song was written by Amir Ali, produced by Adrian Brundy, and performed by Enrico Dells. If you would like to be a guest on our show, or if you have a question or you want to provide some feedback, send an email to WYTOTpodcast@gmail.com. Our podcast is available on all platforms, so make sure you subscribe to our show and follow us on social media. Be well, be safe, and be blessed. Until next time.